The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
Now then, you're welcome back. So, Kieran Donaghy, you're there.
I am, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good, boy. Good.
Good man. I see you have your Kobe Bryant t-shirt on. I will ask you about Kobe before the end of our time together. But let's start with the GAA before we do run out of time. Obviously, on Saturday, Dublin 119, Kerry 119 stole the show and pretty much overshadowed the rest of the weekend's football. Donegal Mayo also a draw. We had Galway, by all accounts, playing a more expansive style of football against Monaghan. And then far too many results for me to go through in the football. But it was a pretty good opening weekend. The Dublin-Kerry game on television peaked at over 500,000 people. It had an average audience of 392,000 watching. So regardless of the time of year, people understand a few things: that this is going to be great football, that this rivalry is going to be very special, that Kerry will eventually, probably, not a guarantee, but because of their youth, probably at some stage topple Dublin, certainly on one occasion. They may not dominate, but they'll topple Dublin on one occasion. And people want to be all over this. So everybody was up for this one, and it delivered. It was a good game.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a fantastic game, I suppose, played by both sides that have only done, probably, I think Kerry only had three full sessions with kind of bodies around the place. And I think Dublin were quite similar. So yeah, for teams to be turning out that type of football, you know, it is a new era. These guys are all fit. They keep themselves fit over the winter. There's no such thing as wintering well anymore. These guys are probably maybe 5-10% off championship pace, probably 10% off championship pace. The football we saw from both teams, the score taking, the skill set, and the fitness levels to keep going onto the 78 or 79th minute was remarkable, really, by both teams. But a fantastic game with lots of talk and points, lots of great scores, great plays, and two teams that, as you rightly say, will surely see each other again, maybe even in a league final, which would be great. But certainly down the road, down the championship, it'd be great to see these two go head to head.
You know what? I think David Clifford's going to be okay with the captaincy.
Yeah, no, I told you that. There'd be no bother with that fella. Even the last kick, because that last kick when Shawnee O'Shea is taking all the frees and all of a sudden it kind of comes onto you, and the week that was in it, being named captain, his birthday was the Wednesday before it. There was three or four dubs kind of encroaching on his kick, I would say, to put him off. There was a guy trying him from behind that I think Michal Burns was trying to keep him out of there. So, and, you know, he boomed it over the bar. You know, he could have kicked it from 50 yards, it would have gone over. But, you know, I just thought that was great resolve by him in the week that was in it, for a guy that already had a fantastic game, because, you know, the human in him would have been thinking, I've had a great game, but if I miss this, it's all that's going to be talked about. You know, the captaincy is going to come up. Could I hack the pressure? So I'm sure all those things are going through his mind if he's normal. But maybe, again, he's not normal. Maybe he's that special bit above everybody else, where he's kind of saying, give me the ball, I'm going to bam this over and show everybody why I'm going to be a great captain for Kerry going forward.
And he certainly did do that. And Peter Keane, his manager, said last week that Clifford's nature is such that things weigh very lightly on his shoulders. That was the phrase that Peter Keane used of him. And that's been borne out all the time. I mean, it's hard to think of a more hyped minor coming up who delivered so seamlessly at senior level. The captaincy thing, I mean, you knew that was just going to be fine, and so it proved. And then even at the end, when John Small and Brian Howard are literally tearing his jersey apart, you're outnumbered. It's kind of tricky enough situation, or what do I do here? How aggro do I get back? He's taken all that stuff in his stride.
Yeah, he's probably going to be targeted, and I think, you know, he will be targeted by every team going forward, because he's that good. You're going to have to try and rattle his cage. You're going to have to try and get inside his head, because let's face it, there's not too many can go out and just beat him football-wise. So teams will try stuff against him. I thought he handled that very well the last day with what was going up, because Dean Rock showed was a nice touch by him. But obviously, other guys in the team didn't want to buy into that, and look, the cameras went away from it, so I don't exactly know how it kicked off, but he handled it very well. He's smiling walking away from all the hassle as it's going on behind him, somewhat like Jim Gavin did in Tralee last year when he walked past the melee and just gave it a quick look and kept going.
Yeah, 14 cards handed out in the game. Referee was criticised in parts, but it wasn't an easy game either. There's definitely needle between these two. Healthy enough kind of needle, nothing you've a problem with, or in danger of getting a bit ugly?
No, I think it's the right amount of needle, to be honest with you. Kerry are trying to this Dublin team has just won 5 in a row. You know, they're the best team of all time, and this young Kerry team are coming up, and Dublin aren't old. Dublin are just as young, nearly, I would say. You know, so Kerry are trying to rattle the cage and trying to get that one over them, because, you know, Dublin tried to do that with us back in 2007, 2009. They were knocking in 2010. There was huge disappointments on the way up along there. And eventually they toppled us in 2011, and it gave them huge confidence. It gave them great belief. It proved to them that they could go do it. And even though they took kind of, you know, they were unlucky 2 years, if you look at the 13 and or the 12 and the 14 semi-finals, they were unlucky, and bar that, they've won every All-Ireland since. So Kerry are trying to lay down markers, and Dublin are trying to make sure, and what Dublin are very good at is being dominant and being in your face, and they will bully you into submission. So, you know, Kerry are trying to stand up to that and trying to get one over for their own heads to know that if you come down the line again, that you can beat them. And I think Kerry got that bit of belief last year in the first game, which you even saw the second game. Dublin were comfortable enough. So it's going to be a fascinating battle over the next, I would say, probably 7 to 10 years of these two teams going at each other.
Yeah, sure will. And like I sort of implied in my intro that somehow Dublin are an aging team and the young guns will just catch them by dint of age. It's not that at all. As you said, Dublin are so young and have young players. Yeah. Like they regenerate. It's just, you definitely
they
feel
do.
There's more,
best player,
there's more in Kerry. Kerry will maybe just will improve that bit more than, you know, Dublin have almost, not hit a ceiling, but they, how do you improve on 5 in a row massively?
Yeah, but like I just think their main guys, the Con Callaghans, the Mannions, the Kieran Kilkennys, the Fentons.
Yeah.
Like Kilkenny and Fenton, when the numbers came up on the preview before the game last year on the box, it always comes up, you know, their age and their club, like, you know, and you're just going through the team kind of going, hold on, lads, Dublin are, Kerry might be young, but Dublin are also very young, and they're young with 4 or 5 All-Ireland medals in a lot of their pockets. And so it's they're not going anywhere. And you know, Kerry probably missed David Moran the last day in the middle of the field. They probably missed Peter Crowley, leaders like that. But Dublin have loads of fellas to come back as well. But I think both teams kind of know now on any given day, if one of them are slightly off and the others are on, I think, you know, there could be the thought there. Kerry will think that if they can perform very well on a day and that Dublin are slightly off for whatever reason, that they should be able to capitalise. But, you know, it will be interesting.
So, again, this is potentially overreading into a league game in January, but let's just do that for a moment. So Dublin had a bit of a lead. I think it was 5-1 at one stage, and then Clifford got that phenomenal goal. And it was pretty nip and tuck then. You know, a little 2-3 point margin here or there, but you could say on the whole it was a pretty even game. Setting aside the scoreboard for a second, just in general play, are Kerry behind Dublin? And if so, where do they improve? Or actually, is this thing now close enough that it will just come down to certain moments and who's going to take a goal or who's going to take a chance? Or is there something in just general play that you'd like to see more of Kerry do to catch Dublin?
No, I think Kerry are doing coping quite well from general play. I would say a lot of the reason for Dublin's dominance over the last 5 years is their game management, and, you know, certainly that's one thing that they've kind of learned along the road, and I think Kerry will start to learn and figure that out. Like a prime example again was the last day. You know, there's, and go back to last year's All Ireland final when they're down a pint and their 5 in a row dreams look like they're going up in smoke. You know, they have the wherewithal, or they've talked about it, or it's been worked on situationally, or just maybe there's just enough geniuses out in the pitch to figure it out that they, you know, James McCarthy calls Cluxton out to Tommy Walsh. You know, there's guys can kind of, you know, they can adapt in real high pressure situations through game management, that they've definitely done a lot of scenario situational work, I would say. And I know Desi Farrell has done a lot of that with his under-20s teams. And, you know, I think there's a certain amount of kind of like, that was on display again the last day, I would say, you know, especially for me when Fenton comes onto the ball, we're in injury time, the game is level, and there's 3 minutes to go, the 6 minutes have gone up, and everybody knows that the +6 is on the big screen. You know, players know there's 73 minutes gone on the clock. Fenton sticks the fist up in the air, as they're well known to do now. And they pass the ball around for 3 minutes. They never take a chance. They never go into contact. They never risk turning it over. And as soon as it gets to kind of 75 minutes and 20 seconds gone, you see them to start getting adventurous. You see fellas start coming off the shoulder. They start walking it up a wing. And they come in and they eventually get Kilkenny. And Kilkenny is literally fouled on this 76th minute, which normally means that you know, they're going to tap over the game winning free. And that type of game management is something I feel that, that Kerry will work on this summer, and that you have to work on, I would say, in the modern age to be so aware of what's going on around you. But I just thought that was unbelievable again by Dublin. So if there was one area I would say they're ahead is in that, and probably physically, strength-wise, you know, Kerry are doing great work with Jason McGahan. He's only in there a year, but I think he will kind of tighten that up, hopefully, that gap, because certainly physically, when you look at the Dublin players compared to the Kerry players, there is a difference in physicality. When you look at the likes of, as I said, you know, Con Callaghan, even from a guy 2 years ago to what he is now, he's an absolute tank. And you know, I think Jason's role will be to get Kerry to that physical level for championship time.
Well, what they've done with Con is just extraordinary, you know, and the hand in the air is now just a feature, and pretty soon we're going to have enough examples of hands in the air and people will properly analyse what exactly they've done or do certain things happen, but their calmness, as you talked about, is just unbelievable. Sorry, you're going to come in there on that.
Yeah, no, and teams need to do something similar. It's a great Dublin tactic, but I don't know, are people almost afraid to say, oh well, we can't put our hand up in the air late on in the game? But it is a clear example. The guy on the ball, if a guy is on the ball in the 73rd minute, everybody's looking at him. Every single player on your team is looking at you because you have the ball, you're making the next decision. So as soon as that hand goes up, it's a clear sign. Everybody is aware, okay, if I was carried away with the game, if I didn't understand the situation that we're in, I now clearly do, because my man has signaled it, and it is the leaders that do it. It is the McCartys, the Fentons, the Kilkennys out around the middle of the field that do signal it. And I really think it's a situational thing. I just think it's a little mental check for everybody to say, okay, have a look at the scoreboard, have a look at the time. Okay, it's level, there's 3 minutes to go. What do we really want to do here? Do we want to fly up and risk a ball and turn it over in the 74th minute and allow Kerry come down and kick a winner? No, we want to hold it. We want to be smart. So, I think more teams need to maybe jump on board with it and not to be worried about going, oh, some other team is doing the fist up, they're copying Dublin. It's what you do, you copy the best.
Absolutely, and I've no doubt it's a reset button, as you said, and I wouldn't be surprised down the line to find out that the first thing that means is take a breath. Like, take a deep breath and then look at the scoreboard. I've no doubt that, you know, it triggers two or three things. And when one of them dares to write a book in good time, we'll find out exactly what it means and who came up with it. Just before we leave the actual play for a second, James O'Donoghue, you know, geez, our footballer of 2014, looking very promising again here. What's the word on him, Ciarán?
Yeah, look, I talked to James a few times last year, and over the last number of years, been a teammate, obviously. And, you know, I felt for the guy because he was trying everything. He was doing everything he was told, but just, you know, sometimes luck isn't going for you with injuries, you know. And he was really fresh. He was really good in the East Kerry O'Donoghue Cup final here early December. He was really good in the East Kerry final, and he was quite good in their early rounds of the championship this year. So he's certainly shown signs of buzzing around, but it was a huge kind of, I would say, a relief for Kerry fans to see him playing so well, and a good call by the management too, by Peter and Tommy Griffin and the lads and Morris Fitz, to get him out of there at 55 minutes when probably a lot of people were looking at the screen going, Jesus, no, don't leave him, he's flying. But maybe they are wary of him going into the 70th minute making a lung busting run, because he worked very hard. Not only did he kick three sublime points, but he worked hard for his team. He linked the play well. You know, I thought he worked well with Tommy Walsh. It's a very interesting full forward line with Clifford and Tommy and James in there, because if they are all going well, they all pose different problems for you. And I think people said that Paul Gainey mightn't had his best game out in the 40. I wouldn't rule that out yet. I think he can be a really good link man. He's an unbelievable worker, one of the hardest working guys in my last few years for the team, even though he was a full forward, a corner forward at that stage. But I think he can play that centre forward role. He's got an eye for a pass. He's got loads of talent skill wise. You know, he can kick off both legs. He can pass outside of the left, inside of the left, outside of the right. He's got all the tricks that you want in the centre forward. And I was happy to see that, and I was happy to see Sean O'Shea out in the middle of the field as well the last day. Again, didn't have the greatest of days, but I think really when it comes down to the summer and you've got the likes of a David Moore next to him that can carry that size, I think Seanie can kind of punish teams with his lung-busting runs and his accurate kicking and obviously his dead ball play.
We're all closely watching the mark then, before I do ask you about Kobe Bryant. We're all closely watching the mark. In any of the games I saw, it didn't... transform the general flow of play. You'd have to say that, you know. And arguably, you know, the Kieran Kilkenny mark, where he's surrounded by people and ball under one arm and hand in the air, there was a certain drama to that. And, you know, it was a big moment and you felt, oh, he's earned that free shot at goal. And you could kind of see the merit in that. But then Air Sport put up an example of just a pop pass into Michael Murphy's chest under no pressure. The whole game stops for 15 seconds, 18 seconds. And you just think, the game does not need this. So even though it wasn't a disaster over the weekend by any means, and you saw like the Kilkenny example of how potentially it could work well, really, it's not having a transformative effect. So it's not like it's improving things massively. And there is still the danger down the line at a big moment or in certain games, it will just be bad for the game. That is kind of where I am on this whole thing. Where are you?
Where am I? I think we had that above in the Armagh game. I think a guy called it and called a mark and it wasn't blown. So if that happens in a big game, there's consternation. I think they just need to tweak it. Maybe if they're going to go with it, they got to tweak it. I'd pull it or I'd go with it and tweak it and say if it's contested catch. So like the Kilkenny one where you're catching it above your head and there's a guy jumping with you to break it and you catch that ball, that you can claim a mark. But I think the one into the chest is the one that we don't want to see. And I think what teams will start doing later on in the year is, you know, if the 45 line is there, if a guy is 2 yards outside it and the guy is 2 yards inside it and they're 20 yards away, they'll kick it across and all of a sudden you could get good free takers that'll come out there and catch the ball. And it's probably not what it was designed for. So I would say maybe looking at tweaking it and saying, look, saying to the refs, make it very simple. If two guys are going up for a ball and a guy catches it, you know, and he puts the hand up, give him the mark. Or if you think he's nowhere else to go and he's surrounded by guys, give him the mark. If he can't get his hand up, because I made the point last week that, you know, fellas could win a ball like I did a few times around the square and you'd have guys holding your hands. You wouldn't even be able to get a hand pass off. Never mind put one hand up in the air because the ball would be stripped out of your hands. And then what's the call? So, you know, I think we'll need a bit more time, but I definitely think the GAA need to say, look, they're going to review it after the league. And you know, I really think that needs to be strong. That and the black card, because, you know, for me, the black card is just not going to work. It's not going to work, especially at club level down around the country in big games come the summer. Who's going to time the things on the sideline? You know, it's not fair for refs to be able to try and control all of that on top of trying to referee a game. So I think both of them should be really looked at the end of the league and, you know, and a clear judgment call made on both of them then. But little tweaks made to both, I would say. I would bring in certain things for the black card and I would bring in a contested mark. If it's caught above your head and there's bodies around you and it passes over 20 yards, I'd certainly reward that, because the opposite to that is landing and turning it over and a mess or a bit of a melee breaks out.
I can hear referees going, geez, so what do I do if a fella catches it at head height and there's a fella 3 yards away from him? Is that contested or not? Anyway.
No, it's not contested. two guys jumping is what I would say, Joe. Okay. You know, like the Kilkenny one, Tyke Morley's behind, he's jumping to break it. Kilkenny makes a great catch, as you rightly say, he lands down, there's bodies around him. He deserves that.
Listen, before we go, you've got your Black Mamba t-shirt on. I dare say you didn't go out and buy that today, so clearly you were a Kobe Bryant fan. You're a Bulls fan growing up, weren't you?
I was a Jordan fan, and to be honest, when Kobe first came on the scene, I was a bit I was a bit negative towards him because I saw him as a threat. And around the late 90s, when he won his three championship in 4 years and he was playing as well as he was, you know, I saw him as a threat to the kind of Jordan legacy, and Jordan was my guy. But later on in life and looking at the way he played and the way he finished out his career and the player he was, it's just joy. To be honest, man, I have a pain in my chest the last day and a half. You know, I went up to bed when I heard the news last night. I went up with my Lola Rose and just lied in the bed with her, put my hand around her. It's heartbreaking that we lost Kobe, but I honestly think it's the fact that there's 9 people dead. There's a whole community ravaged by this. You know, young Gigi had such promise, and Kobe, she was Kobe's girl, and she loved the basketball, and she had his drive and his will to succeed and his will to win. And it's just so traumatic for all the people and families involved. And then there's just the outside, you know, emotion of, you know, their final moments. Was Kobe able to get back to Gigi and hold her when that chopper's going down? There's so many, you know, tough things to think about and so many unanswered questions, I would say, for the people involved. And he's just such a loss to the basketball world. for any young fella, you know, that's trying to make it in any sport, that book there, if you can see it, it's Kobe's book called The Mamba Mentality. And, you know, what I really got from it, and I gave out to Hillary saying she should have bought that when I started playing for Kerry. I wish he wrote it when I started playing for Kerry, because his mentality and the way he approached things and the way he worked on his craft and the way he worked on how to become better, the detail he studied, you know, he never rested on his laurels. He always tried to get better. It's probably the main beef that himself and Shaq had, was that, you know, Shaq, after winning the championship, went and ate burgers and drank for 3 months, and Kobe was in the gym a week later, kind of trying to get better. And, no, it's a huge loss to the basketball community. It's just it's devastating, really. As I said, I've lost my father and my grandmother, and you know, never before someone that I didn't know or meet has it burnt me so bad. And I think there's a lot of basketball people probably seem the same way. And I remember the same thing happened with Michael Jackson, and I didn't really get it. I like Michael Jackson, but I remember the outpouring of grief and emotion. But Kobe was our guy. And when I was sitting on this couch last night, when I found out the news, it was the same couch that I watched Kobe get 60 and finish off the game with 17 straight points in the fourth quarter. That will to win and that desire to win is as close as we'll ever see to Jordan, if not matched it. And you know, talk about going out in style, you know, getting 60 points, the famous time he ruptured his Achilles tendon and he was down on the ground in a heap, you know, and they carried him off the court and he was on the way to the basket and he got fouled on the play and he came back out and he made the two free throws. There was 2 minutes to go in the game, they were down one. You know, even rising up on your tippy toes to shoot free throws with a ruptured Achilles, I can imagine but that was his mentality. He always had that kind of desire and drive. And it's shocking and it's sad, and it's going to take a while. And, you know, he's been inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. That's going to be incredibly sad. And I just feel for his family and you know, the three girls that are left behind and his wife, Vanessa, and all the others affected. You know, there's the baseball coach that died with his wife and their daughter. They have a son and a daughter behind. So it's the whole thing. It's more than Kobe in a way. Kobe's the main story in it, but I think the tragedy is just so rounded because of, you know, they were on their way to this basketball game. Everybody in the Mamba basketball facility is waiting for Kobe to come with the girls to play this game that they played the day previous. And I can just imagine when the news started breaking around there and the horror and the sorrow that was felt by everybody. He looked like such a good dad. And, you know, I heard people saying, you know, grab someone close to you and then tell them you love them. And it probably sums it up the best way I can, really.
The GAA Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.